And now the Native Alaskan men, who here is a Native Alaskan man? Did anyone get a card of that?
Creole.
A Creole woman. Anyone a Native Alaskan man, a Kodiak man?
No. He was married to a man.
Oh, you are.
Kodiak. No, he said he was a Kodiak man.
You're a Kodiak man.
Possibly a hunter.
Okay, come on up.
I haven't hunted for years.
we'll change that.
So we won't have you put this on. This right here, what I want to say about the Kodiak man. Go ahead and read your card to us.
Let me pull it out and fold it over.
Okay.
Kodiak, possibly a hunter for the company. He drowned in March 1821. He was married to Kobaya, a southern Pomo. When he died, Kobaya returned to her home village. They had a son, Keechuk Mitrofan, who was left to be cared for by Alexei Chattaguchi for upbringing.
Excellent. So again, there were neighborhoods, and just like our Kashai woman, when her husband died, she returned to her homeland. And that was very common. And you were married to Kobaya. So as a hunter, the other thing I'd like you to know about Fort Ross is when we think about it, we often think Russian, and most of the people who lived at Colony Ross were Native Alaskan. It was the largest population of people because they were the ones doing the actual hunting. And so what you would look like is, well, you would be wearing this. This right here is an example of kamlaika, and it would be made with seal gut. And usually I have kids put it on, and then I tell them, and they're like, oh. But this is a lot of fun to look at and to know that, again, you had a lot of diversity at Fort Ross, and people wearing and being who they were. Just because you're working in a Russian colony didn't mean that you forgot who you were as a Kodiak. And in fact, it's why the Kodiak were hired by the Russians, is for their talent, their skill at hunting the sea otter. To be exact. And so this is a garment that you would have worn, but to your skin you wore a bird feather parka. And that bird feather parka was made of cormorant feathers. How many of you know what a cormorant looks like? It's a pretty dark feathered bird, ocean going. And they would make a bird feather parka and then put this seal gut over it. It's not this.
Is that warm?
Pretending. So say it is.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Obviously,
it
is.
Okay.
So, seal gun.
So what was the question?
Is it waterproof?
Yes, that's exactly why they wore it, and it's windproof. So you kind of like wearing a down jacket. It's very light, and you're in your kayak, a kayak, and your kayak is made of seal skin as well, and sewn together with twisted seal gut. And you, again, your talent in hunting was amazing. So he's sitting in his boat, and the bottom of this is pretty big because it would tie onto the hole of the kayak. Because when you're in your kayak out at sea, it's very likely you're going to tip over. And in fact, you expect it. And you kind of think it's fun because you would turn yourself back up. And that was, again, a talent that the Native Alaskans had. So you would, to your face, that would be really closed in. You would put seal gut on your face. I mean, seal fat. And then you had a bentwood visor. And this is a one of our kids made this at the school. So go ahead and put that on.
Yes, made out of what? And it's supposed to be made out of what?
Which way?
Well, it's the other way, but it's in your way. It's kind of, yeah. Oh, there you go. I love that. You look great. You're looking good.
You could fool any fish.
Exactly. And that's why they wore it, actually. Bend your head down. Put your head down for a minute. This would look like a face. And so when they're hunting, you know, and they're also shading the glare of the ocean, but this would be to kind of blend a little bit, if you will. And plus, he's wearing seal gut, seal fat, smells like a seal, looks like a seal, the whole thing.
Here comes the shark.
yeah, right. Well, this tool right here is called an atlatl. You guys say that? And this is called the throwing board. And for a Unangan, actually, a Kodiak would be a little different, but this is made of driftwood, and quite often that's the tools that they would use, is driftwood. Driftwood is an amazing piece of wood. It's hard, it's light, and it floats. And so this right here, then you would put the dart in this fashion. It would kind of hook in, although this one's broke. And you have a dart. This is the dart. And this right here would actually go onto the end. Once it's in the animal and you've thrown it, this is barbed and it would stay in. And sometimes this is made with bone, sometimes wood. This is seal gut and it comes off, and at the end of it would be a bladder, a buoy. So it tracks the animal. So you throw it like this. And it's very fast, very hard throw. And that's how they hunted so well in their kayaks. And in fact, they could hunt a whale, which I think is amazing. A lot of guys hunting at the same time, of course, but pretty amazing. So excellent tool. And I'm going to show... I thought just the kids did that.
Kids are a state of mind.
That's right. So this right here, this is exactly what this company is all about. This is what, you know, why the Russian-American company existed. And when I give you the big picture, when, you know, back in 1742, actually, with Vitus Bering, he was stuck on what we call the Commander Islands in the middle of the ocean, the Bering Sea, and what we call the Bering Sea after him. And his guys survived with the warmth of the pelt that they had never seen before, the sea otter. And they ate the seal meat. And that is when the very first time this went into the Russian market, is at that time, 1742. It took years for them to come back to it. And then it took years more for them to figure out how to really do it. And then a few years more for them to get over to Alaska. And Alaska, there were many small companies, individual men coming over hunting, forcing the Native Alaskans to hunt at gunpoint, or saying, I'm going to take your kayak and get in the kayak and never return, because they didn't know how to use the kayaks, the Russians. And then they realized very quickly that a gun doesn't work, we need you. And the company formed in 1799. And this is something that's really important, is that when the company formed in 1799, the church then had equal say. And that changed everything in Alaska, the way it had been going, all for the good. And the Russian Orthodox Church came into Alaska, said, hold on, hold on. These are not slaves. We don't have slavery. These are Russian subjects. They should be paid for their services and under contract. They were like the union rep, saying, wait, hold on. And the church was there to protect their rights. And I can tell you, I've been to Alaska, I've talked to these people, I've talked to the elders of the Native people, and they feel very close to the church in many different ways. And know that it was a change, but the church came in and made sure that they were then paid. Not much. You're not paid much. We feel that. I guess. And so we have, you know, the idea of Alaska, and now it's growing. And the Russian American company now has 5 colonies and no food. Food coming across from Russia to Alaska. So look at my hands. Here's the size of the U.S. Here's the size of Russia. Food coming across would take up to 2 years to get to Alaska. What do you think it looked like? Not so good. And if you ate it, you might get sick, and it didn't look good. It was moving a little bit. not good, not healthy. And that was the core problem for the company, is supplying Alaska. And so that is exactly why they came into California in the first place. So let me go back to you. You've done some excellent work. You, the sea otter, you are our hunter. We pay you. You're under contract. Good work. And go ahead and hold this. And this right here is a harbor seal. And see, there's some places with no fur. You never have that on an otter, or he's not going to make it. This guy has a layer of fat to protect him, just in case. He can grow his fur back, it'll come back in. This guy has to have fur covered. He doesn't have that. You want to touch it, feel it? I'll pass it around. So if you look at these fur, I mean, which one would you want? Right, the sea otter. And this one was worth a value of about $3. This was worth about $100. So just no comparison. And so you again, excellent job, and I'll pass them around. We'll have plenty of time. You've got this for your family. Now that you're at Ross and you've intermarried into, you know, the life at Ross with the Kobea, cute girl, right? Hoshaya. And you have your life. And so we wanna thank you for your service, and we may even pay you. So thank you. You can go ahead and have a seat.
What's the name of this animal? Of the $3 animal?
Of this one? This is a seal, harbor seal. This is the guy you see out on the rocks now. And I'll go ahead and pass this out.
So they're still there?
The harbor seals are, the sea otter are not.
Do you have that? I have two questions.
Okay.
So first was, when the Native Alaskans were hunting, did they hunt like as individuals, or were hunts for the sea otters done
in parties? Most of the time they'd go out in groups.
Okay.
And they would go out in groups, but not, I mean, once you know, our coastline, you could pretty much wipe that out in a couple of years. They would hunt all along the California coastline. And so they would take ships, load of kayaks and Alaskans, and go down to like Baja or San Diego or Santa Barbara or the Channel Islands and hunt. And then bring the fur back to Bodega Bay at the warehouse, prep them, and then you'll see where they go. So, yes?
Are there sea otters now?
Not in our area. There are sea otter in Monterey. And a very specific reason why is, have you been to Monterey? And you've seen them in the bay, playing, frolicking, so sweet? They are there because they were protected. That this is claimed Spanish land, by the way. So when the Russians first arrived in 1806 into San Francisco to get food for Alaska, they didn't know that the sea otter population was as big as it was here. So that was a big light bulb that was like, oh my gosh, look what we could do. So let's be really nice to these people. And so they come into San Francisco in 1806, and I'll answer your question. It's going to be a roundabout way. So 1806, and they encourage trade with the missions, the priests, who have tons of food, and in fact, food that they have left over from their year supply. But the other thing that happened is that, so this is Spanish California. Russia and Spain are friends, they're allies against Napoleon. And it's important to keep that really big picture in mind, because if it had been an American ship coming into San Francisco Bay, they would have been turned away. Because they flew the Russian flag, they were welcomed. In fact, they hid the Russian-American company flag. Don't fly that flag. We're not a commercial company. Put it away. And they hoisted the Russian flag to present themselves as just Russian exploring, we need water.
And
what? The Russian American company did that, Rosanna. And it happened to be that the Presidio officer was away in Monterey, and so his son was in charge. His son welcomed them in, and his wife, and the wife had received gifts by the time her husband came back, and gifts of silk, and a mirror, and a packet of needles, and I mean, that's what every woman wants, right? And she had, I mean, it wasn't legal for trade. And they were just saying, look, we just want the extra food, and the missions were starting to see the ship in the bay, and they started showing up going, we want trade, because Spain was not sending goods over from Spain. So in Spanish California, they were lacking goods, basics. scissors, little items that they didn't have. It was a good trade. So by the time the husband got back, the Russians were like in his house. And we have documents of this. Rezanov was like living in their house. And they didn't leave for 2 months. they hung out and they got to know each other. And in fact, that's where that love story comes in, the Yavos and Yunos. Yunos and Avos, am I saying it right? And that's a whole nother half hour, that whole talk, because it's not as it appears. Love is secondary.
That's
yes.